We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome to the Guilty as Charged podcast presented by our friends at Prize Picks. My name is Steven and I'm the host, and obviously Tyler is not here today, so I got our good friend of the show, Mr. Jake Hefner, to come on in his place. Very excited about him. We've had him on in a crossover episode. He's come on with Alex, so this is his first time on the flagship podcast, if you will, and I'm really excited to talk to him today. So Jake, what's up, man? How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Yeah, obviously, this is not Tyler. I'm not doing handstands or cartwheels. I'm pushing 40, so I wouldn't be able to do that anyway. This is not Universe 838 or 616 or whatever you want to consider it. This is just two guys who love football, love the Chargers, getting together for a nice conversation.
Yeah, pushing 40 does not show at all, might I add. So it still continues to blow my mind. I thought you were like younger than me the first time we met. So there we go. what does that say about me, I guess? But excited to talk about Joe Ortiz. He's the big fish that we're talking about today. Unfortunately, I have to talk about the travesty that came out today that Antonio Gates is not going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. This is one of the biggest snubs in all-time history, in my opinion, Jake. But what's your reaction here to this news that we just got?
I mean, did they change people on the Hall of Fame committee? I mean, did they bring in some new people that haven't been watching football over the last 25 years? How do you keep this man from a first ballot Hall of Famer, given what he has done statistically? You don't even have to watch any film. Just look at the stats and tell me that's not Hall of Fame worthy in the first ballot.
Yeah, it's wild to me. I mean, you look at, obviously, the touchdown record is the touchdown record. But it's not just the touchdown record. Like, nobody's going to break that record for a very long time. I mean, Travis Kelce, if you put, like, playoffs in it, obviously he could, like, pass him for total touchdowns. But Travis Kelce's at 77 regular season touchdowns. Like, he's not coming anywhere close to that. That touchdown record is going to stand for a very long time.
Yes.
And if you just put it in receiving touchdowns, he's seventh in NFL history, including wide receivers. And he's third all time in receiving yards from a tight end. Like, the longevity was crazy. If this is because of the one PED suspension, I'm going to lose my shit, because that would be such a petty reason to keep somebody out of the Hall of Fame. And traditionally the NFL is not as bad about that as Major League Baseball, but I saw that being pointed around on Twitter. So I am maybe wondering if that's the case, but we don't know who got in over him just yet. I'm sure that's going to come out in a few minutes here, but Gates not getting in, man. It's a travesty. This is somebody who should absolutely have been a first ballot Hall of Famer.
I didn't even think about the PED thing, just considering the guys that you already have in the Hall of Fame during the time where steroids was looked the other way in the NFL, given the guys you already have in. I can't see why that would be the ultimate factor as to why he did not get in today, but still, I understand it is the Hall of Fame is an elite class within itself as far as the people who get in, but Antonio Gates being snubbed today is a damn travesty.
Yeah, I understand that it's like you want it to be like this elite club, but if you're keeping guys like Antonio Gates and Steve Smith and Torrey Holt out of the Hall, I think you maybe need to like loosen up the requirements just a smidge, because those are all guys that should have been in, you know, first off. I'm not asking to turn this into the Basketball Hall of Fame where guys like Yao Ming, who play for seven seasons, are in the Hall of Fame. Like, just a little smidge here. I'm just asking for a little bit because that seems kind of ridiculous to me.
Yes, it makes perfect sense. I mean, honestly, it just what a great story, just from a standpoint of, again, another undrafted guy that comes in, as you said, with a basketball background and does the thing that he does and puts up some of the best numbers of tight ends in NFL history. I mean, that is not something that comes around every once in a while that you could just put into the Hall of Fame to say, like, okay, yeah, you know, you got two dozen first round wide receivers that were taken, and then we knew that they were going to put up great numbers. Nobody saw this coming from Antonio Gates when he came in the league. I mean, it's just amazing to me that of all the snubs that you look the other way with this one.
Yeah, it's that's a frustrating one for sure. Well, once we figure out who got in over him, you know, maybe that'll give some context, but that list, there's nobody that should have made it over Antonio Gates, in my opinion. So we'll see what happens there. Turning to some more exciting stuff here. Jake obviously does great stuff for Chargers Unleashed. If you guys are not listening to him, I would encourage you to definitely go do that. You and I, we'll get into the specifics here from like all the Joe Ortiz stuff, but I just want to get like your vibe here, because you and I and Tyler, we sat at training camp and we're kind of like trying to figure out how excited about the season we were going to be. You know, like we had all these question marks, and I remember talking to you and Daniel Popper was out there, you know, on the sidelines with us as well. And then the season obviously went the way it did, but you know, we've got Jim Harbaugh now, we got Joe Ortiz now. So for you, like, what's kind of the last few weeks been like covering this? You know, we've talked about this, but your perspective and Dan's perspective, like, what is that the last couple weeks been like for you guys?
It just feels like a whirlwind. It's something that this fan base, I don't think, has ever experienced, from just a standpoint of a culture shock that resonates with players, with this fan base that has just been aching for that for so long. And even, and you could even take it back to just like, okay, you know, we haven't had a coach since Marty that was like that, to brought us to that type of a level in terms of the team and the success. But even Marty at that point in time was established, and you know, Marty's big knock was that he couldn't get it done in the playoffs. And ultimately, unfortunately, that again reared true for when he was with the Chargers. But to now go from Schottenheimer through the Norv Turner days, through the Mike McCoy days, the Anthony Lynn days, and now where we're at Brandon Staley. And it just always seemed like this team was always handcuffed by something. And you could call it injuries, you could call it, you know, coaching, you could call it personnel, lack thereof, draft picks, GMs, whatever it is you want to say. It just seems like this team was ultimately always handcuffed one way or another. And then you bring in Jim Harbaugh, and Dan and I had even speculated on this when John Spanos came out and was talking about their initial coaching search, to say, like, you know, we're going to cast a wide net. And even I had to, I had a little bit of reservations about it, because he has said this during previous coaching searches. Mm-hmm. And then when you look what they actually done, going through 15 candidates, literally through every scope in terms of experienced, you know, non-experienced, first-time possibilities, whatever it is you want to call it. And then to get the fish that you were hunting for from the very get-go, and then now to see the trickle-down effect that has taken place. Not only do you bring in Jim Harbaugh, but you pair him with a guy who has been with an organization for 26 years of sustained success over that period of time, knows Jim very well. And now we're starting to see the other trickle-down effects from Greg Roman, from Jesse Minter, from all of these connections that almost like a hive mind, if you will. And now Chad Alexander yesterday coming in to replace JoJo Wooden as the assistant GM. There is going to be a clear, focused direction as far as what the front office and Harbaugh are going to want for this team moving forward. And you've never seen that type of cohesion before. So The outlook as far as the draft gets more interesting. The outlook as far as trading down, getting comp picks, which we all love that conversation. Yeah. The outlook as far as free agent decisions, all of those things now get amplified.
Yeah, I think that all of that is incredibly well said. I think that, you know, this makes me think of a conversation that, you know, Bill Barnwell, Nate Tice, and Robert Mays were having on the Athletic Football Show. And every single year they do like a lessons you can learn from the last four teams standing. And Bill Barnwell brought this point up of like, NFL teams need to be flexible with your identity. Like, obviously you have your culture and things that you stand by, like you can't change the pillars, but like the identity, like you have to change and like move with the times. And I sat there and I was like listening to that, and I'm like, okay, comparing what we've been hearing for the last 11 years under the Tom Telesco era, if you will, versus what Joe Ortiz and Jim Harbaugh were just talking about, I feel like the Chargers are definitely moving in that direction. We're not going to know. This is the first step. I know that there's a lot of negativity about the Greg Roman hire. We can talk about that if we want to, but this is the first step of the Jim Harbaugh, Joe Ortiz era. And at some point, they're going to have the chance to be a little bit more flexible, maybe, you know, change some things, maybe evolve some things. And if they do that, then, you know, that's kind of the key thing from a philosophical standpoint for them in that second step of getting to that second step. Like, I think everybody kind of needs to take a step back here and realize, like, this is the first iteration of this regime. We can't expect, you know, 5 years from now that everything is going to look the same. You know, correct. These teams have a chance to evolve. They have a chance to learn. They have a chance to adjust on the fly. The difference is that I trust Jim Harbaugh and Joe Ortiz to be the guys to do that. And regardless of who the coach was, Tom Telesco never changed his ways. He was stuck. He was rigid. He was not flexible. He collaborated with his coaches. I will give him credit for that. And I always have. But then the coaches too. Anthony Lynn was rigid. Brandon Staley, rigid. Like, this is my way. This is how I'm doing things. This is how I came up. Jim Harbaugh has shown throughout his tenure that, yes, I have my core philosophies, but maybe I'll go hire Mike McDonald from the NFL. Maybe I'll go get Jesse Minter from Vanderbilt. Like, he has flexibility and shown that. So I think that is a core thing as well to look forward to for Chargers fans.
Yeah, and to piggyback off of that, it's just Joe Ortiz's message just, I thought, hit so strong. And some people criticize it to say like, oh, okay, you're going to win multiple championships. No, but it's like, what are you going to say? We're going to contend?
Yeah.
Chargers have talked about contending for way too long. To me, Joe Ortiz and Jim Harbaugh, they knew exactly what it was. And I feel like if you were to listen to their press conferences, you can pick some things out to say, they knew exactly what is needed for this roster moving forward. Whether it's the culture change or personnel or whatever it is that they need, they know that it needs a culture shock. They know what the perception is of the Los Angeles Chargers up until this point, a narrative that they have in part created themselves, and they know what it's going to take to fix it. Now, obviously, you have to keep your word and go out and actually execute, but to him to actually come out and talk like that, I thought was a case of a guy who understands what it is that he needs to do, obviously is bringing in the personnel, both in the front office and in the coaching staff that he's familiar with to get the job done. And to Tyler's tweet earlier about, I think it was actually about Chad Alexander yesterday, Joe Ortiz is not messing around. Mm-hmm. He is not messing around. And you can clearly see that. And we're just talking about, this is days after he's officially made the GM. I mean, he's wanting to hit the ground running.
Yeah. No, he totally deserves credit for that. For those who may have missed it, the Chargers have hired Chad Alexander as their new assistant GM, stealing him from the New York Jets. I think that says a lot about the cachet that Joe Ortiz has around the league, because even he was like, yeah, like I have some guys I want to bring in, but like, I might not be able to do that until like after the draft season. Like, we'll see. It might just be like me and everybody else, but we'll see what happens. And then the next day it's like, boom, splash hire right away. And you know, this Chad Alexander hire, I think, can turn into something really cool for the Chargers, because he's been with Joe Ortiz. He knows how he thinks. He's been with Joe Douglas, who obviously came up for the Ravens as well. And He's a former fullback. He's a former defensive end from Wake Forest. Like, there's a lot of identity cohesion here that I think should be exciting, because, like, we're never going to know. It's so hard to know for, like, front office, like, who gets credit for what here. But Joe loves the line of scrimmage. Dan and Jeremiah said offensive line is Joe's thing. And then this guy is a former fullback and a defensive end who loves the line of scrimmage. He's been in New York, who have consistently invested in the defensive line over the past 6 years with Joe Douglas. So this is a really cool pairing. And, like, as a very enthusiastic fan of the trenches, this has me fired up about the possibilities for the draft and for the free agency going forward.
Yeah, it's when you look at that and you start thinking to yourself, because you and I, you know, we're big fans of Mr. Bowers over there in Georgia. Yes. But when you start looking at some of these moves, you start thinking to yourself, it's like, is it going to be an offensive lineman at number five? It really could end up lining up that way. Who knows? We'll obviously know more here within the next month in free agency and the draft goes. But it shows, obviously, what they invest in. And you know this from Jim Harbaugh's previous drafts, how he likes to build up his team, what's most important to him. Obviously, that's one of the reasons that Greg Roman was coming over here. Obviously, having the offensive coordinator title, he's definitely going to have a hand in fixing the run game. That is for sure, because if there is one thing that sticks out on his resume, it's his success that he has brought to his stints in Baltimore and in San Francisco and what he's done for their running games when he was the OC there. But they have an idea of what it is that they want to do. And I think it's in simplest terms of having Justin Herbert not have to play Superman on every single down. Make this offense more balanced, make it more confusing for defenses, for who they have to be responsible for and covering. And who the hell wants to see a stacked box and people just pinning their ears back and coming off after Justin Herbert every snap? We don't. We've lived through it essentially since he came in the league. We'd like to see something different and somebody else take the reins and somebody else for the defense to worry about. But to your point, building up through the trenches and protecting Justin Herbert and getting him more weapons, they know what it is that they want to do. And as you alluded to, it could start in the trenches.
Yeah, I mean, the Brandon Staley regime, I think, like, I can understand why you would look at Justin Herbert and Derwin James as like the guys, like, we're going to put everything on their plates. Like, we believe that they can handle it. Derwin's going to play seven positions. Justin's going to have all the protections and all the calls and all the checks and everything. But there is something to be said about, like, let's ease this process back here a little bit. Let's not, like, stress them out full on all the time. And it's about complementary football. Like, that was always the issue with Brandon Staley's defense. He got special teams right. I'll give him that. He hired Ryan Ficken, the god feature statue out of SoFi Stadium. Yes. It's the best thing he ever did as Chargers coach. But the defense, the run game, it was always lacking. And whether it was Kellen Moore, Joe Lombardi, Frank Smith did his absolute best to get it. And they were middle of the pack with Frank Smith, and that was great. But this regime truly believes in complementary football, and it's about the run, and it's about the playmakers, and it's about defense, and it's about special teams, and it's about not making Justin Herbert have to play at an MVP level every single week, every single down. And instead, it's just like, hey, like, we're going to make his life easy, and we're going to maximize his talent as well.
Yeah. It's how much easier can you make it when you look at San Francisco, for example, as far as Brock Purdy not having to necessarily play Superman every single down, you have Christian McCaffrey. You've always had that Shanahan running scheme. Baltimore, for what Lamar Jackson turned into for an MVP season that he had, he also had a great running game over there in Baltimore. I think when Kansas City needs to run the ball, they can run the ball with Isaiah Pacheco, and they can take some of that pressure off of Patrick Mahomes. So making a balanced offense and kind of just going back to the whole simple, stupid type of formula, it works in this circumstance with Justin Herbert. You're going to be able to open up the playbook a lot more if you can get a decent running game going.
Yeah, 100%. Obviously, it's not all roses. The Chargers roster does need some work. It's why they're hiring Joe Ortiz to come in here. It's why Chad Alexander is in here. We've talked a lot about the Big Four, so I don't necessarily want to focus on the Big Four and, like, their futures. In terms of the Chargers roster, like, my biggest curiosity is, like, how does Joe Ortiz prioritize what positions? You know, Jesse Minter's defense is very different than Brandon Staley's in terms of positional versatility. There's some things that they have to clean up. We just talked about the offensive line, the defensive line, safeties. Like, I have no idea what the priorities should be. That's why we're here to discuss that in particular. And I think, like, we'll start on the defensive side of here, Jake, if that's cool with you. When you look at, like, the Jesse Minter defense and, like, what the Chargers currently have, what's, like, priority number one for you? Like, if you're Joe Ortiz and you're talking with Jesse Minter and you're like, what's our game plan? What's the first position that you are attacking this offseason? I know it's a loaded question because they need so much.
It is a loaded question. Yeah, because you literally could just go anywhere on the board. I honestly think... See, even me saying it now is somewhat confusing. But to me, I would say whatever it is that you're going to do along the defensive line, and obviously you do have some bodies to fill with Sebastian Joseph Day not being there. You have to make your decisions on Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa, but you have to prioritize that secondary. And whether that means you're going to be bringing back Alohi Gilman and extending and giving him a contract extension, a second contract, you have to get some help in that secondary. Asante Samuel Jr. cannot do this on his own, nor do I think that he's capable of doing certain things that defensive coordinators want him to do. I think he is a very good cornerback when you mold him to his strengths. I think what happened with the Chargers and Brandon Staley, it was almost like Asante was asked to do too much because obviously you didn't have J.C. Jackson out there playing to his form. Michael Davis obviously took a step back from his 2022 season that looked well. And you had Jasir Taylor and Dean Leonard that were question marks and didn't have enough experience. So I think if you get Asante Samuel to play in the system that he is good at and play to his strengths, he can thrive. Now, you definitely need to put some talent around here at corner. Mm-hmm. In terms of all the priorities of the draft, it's tough because, you know, when we were looking at this maybe in November, not knowing when the Chargers were going to pick, I think a lot of our conversations was immediately going to cornerback, kind of predicting where the Chargers were going to fall at that point. So the Kool-Aid McKinstry, the Nate Wiggins contracts, the Teron Arnold conversations were all coming up. And now for the Chargers having five, that seems way too rich now to be thinking about going corner. So do you trade back? I would say at least you'd have to come out of this draft by the end of day two with a cornerback that you know you're going to start opposite of Asante Samuel Jr. I don't really know anybody else that's on that roster nor a pending free agent right now that you can afford to come in there to take that spot.
Yeah, it's such a tough question because, like, I assume that they're going to cut one of Joey Bosa or Khalil Mack, and you'll need a third edge rusher. Maybe they decide to rip the bandaid off and cut both. Then you need two. And defensive tackle is slim. You know, linebacker is slim. Corner is slim. Safety is slim. It's so tough. Like, the defense is in rough shape. And, like, I know that there's a ton of people. Like, Colin Cowherd did, like, a 12-minute thing about the Chargers are going to contend right away. Like, maybe an offense, they'll have an offense that can contend. The defense, I think, is going to be a longer-term thing here. But I think I look at what the Ravens have done with Mike McDonald and what Jesse Minter has done at Michigan, I think safety is the right spot to say this should be the number one priority, because I think that Jesse Minter is going to look at Derwin James and look at what Mike McDonald did with Kyle Hamilton and say, hey, you know what? Like, I want this guy playing in the slot quite often. Like, we saw what he did at the close of the season. That he's just comfortable there, and it's such a weapon if he can play effectively there. But you don't have the guys who can fill those spots. So, like, if it's me, I'm Jesse Minter and saying I need reliable safety play so that I can use Derwin in his best way possible. And I know it's weird to say safety is the highest priority, but I think you look at a guy like Geno Stone, who played with the Ravens as the free safety, you know, I don't think he should cost that much. You can look at a guy like Cam Curl. You can look at a guy like Julian Blackman from the Colts. If I'm Jesse Minter, I feel like I need better safety play. So I think safety would be my choice here to say, this is where I'm targeting first. We could figure out some cheap replacements elsewhere along the defensive line, draft, stuff like that. But I think Jesse Minter is going to really want to say, hey, you know what? I need a better safety trio here. Like, let's go get some quality free agents in here.
I guess my retort to you on that would be, is it more, would this be the safety that's coming in to replace JT Woods as a third safety, or do you think that they need an upgrade over Alohi Gilman to pair with Derwin, even though Alohi obviously played great in the last year of his contract in terms of proving his value? But in terms of where you're talking about investing that safety in, is it for safety three, or do you want this guy starting next to Derwin?
Yeah, I'm not against Alohi coming back and being safety two or three, depending on the order. But I think it would be a mistake to head into the season trusting JT Woods or a rookie to be a third safety. I think you need three quality veteran players in here to really run Jesse Minter's scheme from the safety position. Because if you really look at the Ravens, like, Marlon Humphrey is a great player, but Marlon Humphrey misses time every single year. And the Ravens never really missed a beat because of what they have in the middle. And so for me, like, Alohi can come back, I'm cool with it. I think he's a good culture guy. He's a good, you know, obviously he creates a lot of turnovers. He has that kind of mentality. I think he could fit in the same kind of role. But I think they need three veteran safeties in here, and I think you do that through free agency. That's kind of my read on what the Ravens have done so well and what Jesse Minter has been able to do at Michigan.
Yeah, I like the idea. I like the idea. I mean, again, it's tough. How many holes can you fill? Well, they're not all going to be filled in free agency. That's definitely for sure. And the draft, how are you going to prioritize it? Because you literally have as much things on defense that you need on the offensive side of the ball, save for quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's like, go get Justin Madubuike. And I'm like, they have like 37 needs. Like, let's relax.
Exactly. And we don't have the spending money that we had a year ago. Unfortunately, we can't do that.
Yeah. I guess my next question here from the defensive side of things, how much are you trusting Deion Hanley in year two? And linebacker, I don't think Jesse Minter needs linebacker as much as maybe Mike McDonald did, because Mike McDonald obviously, you know, traded for Roquan Smith and that like elevated their passing game. Maybe Jesse Minter does, but Deion Hanley, where are you at with him? And then linebacker, what's your kind of your thought process and how they could address that?
We're kind of in that Isaiah Spiller conversation now, because while I was happy that they were giving Deion a little bit more snaps when Giff Smith was the interim head coach, I still didn't feel like it was enough. I still felt that he got more preseason snaps at linebacker than he did during those final 4 weeks of the season. So it's still kind of a question mark, because as much as I love him as an athlete, I think he's going to turn into a great linebacker. I definitely think he has proven that he's got more value than just on special teams. But you're kind of right in the middle there, where you just haven't seen enough of him in those moments of the game to say 100% absolutely he's the guy. But I think Jesse Minter and Jim Harbaugh, looking at what his game is and his profile, hell, why not? I think you could create something really special from the linebacker spot and just, you know, essentially just let him go. Let him go. Let him play his game.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what he looks like in this defense. Again, I think there's going to be some growing pains there because of the lack of reps. Would have been great to get him those reps. I'm kind of the mindset that you maybe draft somebody in like round three, round four, and then you let that rookie, Deion and Nick Neiman, kind of duke it out. Like, I think linebacker is a position where you maybe take some lumps this year see kind of the growth. Maybe Deion hits, maybe the rookie hits, and maybe kind of overcompensate that with the safety play. That's kind of my mindset, because it is so much easier to pay for quality safety play than it is for quality linebacker play. I mean, the Jaguars handed out fat contracts and first round picks. I love my guy, Devin Lloyd. I hope he turns out better than he has been so far, but they invested premium resources in the linebacker spot, and it's been a swing and a miss. So linebacker to me has become really tricky. So I almost would just rather invest in youth and take some lumps and let them see how they can kind of handle that. Next year, you'll have some money. Maybe you swing for a veteran next year. But linebacker for me is kind of a youth movement. If I'm picking one position to kind of set aside for now, unfortunately, I do think that is linebacker.
I would fully agree with that. And especially, you know, you think about the transition going from Drew Tranquil to the contract that you gave Eric Kendricks. Obviously, Kenneth Murray is most likely on his way out the door.
Yeah.
And just again, we're talking about overall spending here. Priority in terms of free agency goes, I would probably put linebacker toward the bottom if I had, you know, to stack rank all the other positions as far as where I'd want to put my money. But yeah. Then to your point, in terms of going with a youth movement, you're kind of also a little bit snake bitten because this draft, as far as the linebacker class goes, not the best. Not the best. So you have to do some good hunting to get some good play out of this class, depending on when you want to prioritize it.
Yeah, the college linebacker, it's such an issue right now. Like, there's some very interesting prospects. It was the same thing last year, but the missed tackle rates is absurdly high in this particular class. Like, there are guys with like 15, 18% missed tackle rates. The only guys who are really low in that regard are Junior Colson from Michigan and Peyton Wilson, who has like an extensive medical history. So it's a tough year to need a linebacker. That's why I'm kind of just like, hey man, let's get some athletes. Let's take some youth. Let's see what happens. Right.
Yes.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, before we shift gears here and get to the offensive side of the ball, we do have to pay the bills over here. So, Chargers fans, we encourage you to make Little Caesars the official pizza sponsor of the NFL. Knows football, fans love a great game and a great deal. So we're tossing out a challenge and calling it Pick Six for Slices and Sticks. If there's a Pick Six during Super Bowl 58, fans who accepted the challenge on our app will get a free Slices and Sticks, period. We've partnered with NFL legend Derek Brooks of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers because he knows all about the Pick Six, having returned one during Super Bowl 37. That play led to a 44-yard touchdown and a win for the Buccaneers. So accept the challenge today and win some pizza from Little Caesars. We also encourage you to use our partner Prize Picks, the best and easiest app for daily fantasy. They are going to have several Super Bowl specials this weekend. We definitely encourage you to take advantage there. We know that several of you are Lakers fans or whatever, the Clippers fans. You know, I know we always see some NBA stuff here in the chat. Alex obviously is a big 76ers fan. The Prize Picks crew has some great deals from the NBA side of things as well. You can use the link prizepicks.com/guilty, code guilty at checkout for a deposit match up to $100. So appreciate you guys for using Prize Picks and Little Caesars as always. All right, Jake, let's get to the offensive side of things here. We talked about the offensive line a little bit here. We both love Brock Bowers. I saw your guy Dan had a little interview with him. Must be nice out there in Las Vegas getting to interview Brock Bowers. For you, what's kind of your intrigue on offense outside of the fifth overall pick? Like, what are you looking forward to seeing how this group handles the offensive side of the ball?
I mean, immediately you start thinking to yourself, like, okay, obviously tight end is just such a high priority for what you're expected to have on the roster next year. And then you think beyond that, essentially, as of right now, it's Donald Parham and it's Stone Smart, and they're only going to be with the team for one more year. And Justin Herbert has not had that type of a tight end since Hunter Henry in his rookie season. And even still, if you were to weigh the talent differences between Hunter Henry and Brock Bowers, I don't think that there's any comparison in that at all. But just to have a tight end that could make plays like that, he has not had even an inkling of that since his rookie year. But then you have to start looking at the wide receiver group. And depending on what happens with Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, possibly both, you have to start investing in that once again, because I don't think that the Chargers taking Quentin Johnson and Darius Davis last year takes them away from investing again in wide receiver this year, because Joshua Palmer is now coming up on the final year of his contract. You're going to see a lot of turnover in that wide receiver room over the next 2 years, and you have to start putting some better talent in there. But then the running back spot is just, it's such a cluster right now, because obviously nobody expects Austin Eckler to be returning. Joshua Kelly, I would assume the same. You still, amazingly, do not really know what you have with Isaiah Spiller. I still do not understand from the fact that he has not been able to get a good complement of snaps through two seasons. So because of that, that's still a question mark. And kind of maybe a little bit better than the linebacker class, but this running back class, unfortunately, is not last year's running back class. So the ones that you have that could be a surefire home run three down back for you, those are few and far between as it relates to this draft. So where are you going to prioritize that for the offense? So skill positions, obviously. And then in terms of Will Clapp coming back or not, in terms of who's going to be snapping the ball to Justin Herbert, kind of you got to obviously invest in. Yeah, kind of a big deal. Somebody has to snap the ball to Justin Herbert, and it needs to be someone I think that you take in this draft. I think if you were to go through the strongest positions out of those four that I just named off, it's wide receiver and center are very strong as it relates to this draft goes. So I think that the Chargers can find both, depending on when they want to invest in them. I think you could find two players in the draft at those two positions that will really help you out.
Yeah, we had somebody on in December to talk about the draft, and they were like, yeah, I don't love this center class. And like, after watching it, I love this center class. I think the center class has a lot of dudes to it. So that to me is like definitely something I'm pegging for the draft. Personally, I just love the idea of like having that long-term guy there. The tight end position we've talked about a lot, obviously the running back position as well, in terms of like, we wish they would have taken one last year, just at any point would have been nice to see. but tight end again, I think you need a veteran like blocker first. Even if you draft Brock Bowers, you're going to need some reliable blocking alongside him. Like, I think Brock Bowers is a good blocker. I don't think he's like an edge setter. He's not like a guy that's going to like dig out a defensive end and like take one on in pass blocking. That's not why you're drafting him, but he can block. Like, he's a perimeter blocker. He's a second level blocker, and he can do that well. So you are going to need kind of like a physical presence there. You know, maybe that's like, you know, a Adam Troutman or my guy, Colby Parkinson. I've mentioned him like 17 times as like a trade target that I would love to see. So they are, I do think they need like a veteran blocking tight end. And then running back too, like you can't just draft somebody. Like you need multiple bites of that apple, in my opinion. So where are you at with like the Saquon Barkley thing? Like, Jim Harbaugh supposedly told Ryan Leaf that he wants Saquon. I don't know how much I buy that, but it is what it is. And then Saquon is like, yeah, I would love to play for the Chargers at Radio Row. So are you a expensive contract for running back, or are you kind of like a Gus Edwards type? Where are you at with all that?
You know, first of all, I feel so bad for the running backs again. I mean, we thought that last year's example of how the market was set was bad. Yeah. I think it's going to be even worse this time around. For me, I mean, obviously a talent like Saquon, you'd love to bring him on board. Contractually, I'd be interested to know how that would all work out. I agree with you 100% in terms of taking multiple bites at the apple for running back. I definitely think that you would target a free agent running back, that being a Gus Edwards or a J.K. Dobbins, familiarity with the Baltimore system, bringing them in to pair with whatever day three, again, running back that you go and select for this Chargers team, and you try to create a two-headed monster out of that. I think that's the best way to go to get some success in terms of somebody with presence, and then depending on the type of running back that you go out and get, see what type of system complement that they can create in terms of a two-headed monster back there at the running back position.
Yeah. Your point about the running back markets too, like Brad Spielberger, who's the best in the business at projecting contracts, he has Saquon and Josh Jacobs and Derrick Henry, like all projecting at less than the franchise tag per year. Like that market is just like tanking right now. And those guys, none of them really had like an awesome season. Like Derrick Henry certainly, I think, exceeded expectations for his age and the amount of carries he had. But, you know, Tony Pollard also projected less than the franchise tag. Austin Eckler, who could maybe come back, I don't know. Austin Eckler said he's not closing any doors there, but, you know, he's basically projected to repeat his previous contract. Like, these are all guys who, like, they're all valuable players. Nobody's disputing that, but it's such a tough position right now. But for me, I think you kind of are balancing this with like a $4 or $5 million contract type and like a third or a fourth round pick. Like, I think that's like an ideal world there. But at the same time, maybe you sign a $4 or $5 million guy, and then also like a vet minimum guy, and just say, hey, like we're gonna veteran this position group. Maybe we'll see what happens with Isaiah Spiller, and then we'll save the draft for all these other positions. Because, like you were saying, I love Bucky Irving, but outside of that, it's a lot of question marks there at the running back position this year. There's health concerns for several of them. There's age concerns, so. It is a kind of a tough year for a running back draft perspective.
Yeah, and you've already lived through the day three running backs that Tom Telesco had selected year over year over year. It's like, okay, are you going to hitch your future to yet another one and hope that they pan out? And while that's totally possible, this draft class just might not be the one to do it in.
Yeah, yeah, 100% there. Yeah, man, it's a lot of question marks here for the Chargers roster. I know everybody wants to see the big spending, the big money, and maybe they ripped a Band-Aid off from the big four and they're able to do that. But my expectation is kind of that they do the short-term contracts, low money deals. We know that Joe Ortiz wants to protect the comp picks. He might get a couple for Gerald Everett and Austin Eckler. We'll see. But I'm not expecting anything crazy in free agency. Maybe several additions, but not anything like super expensive this year.
Agreed. I think when Joe Ortiz mentioned the comp pick discussion, very faintly, I heard it outside my window. I think it was just the collective yell of pleasure from Chargers fans everywhere when we heard the term comp picks come up, something that we never hear of.
Yeah. And you could tell that it was sincere. He was like, I'm a fan of comp picks. And then he mentioned it like seven other times. And every time he's like, comp picks, baby. Yeah.
Yes. So we're all about that.
Yeah. 100%. Jake, this has been awesome, man. I can't thank you enough for filling in for Tyler here. Chargers fans listening, I'm sure most of you know who he is, know where you can find him, but your co-host is obviously in Las Vegas. So what do you guys got coming up for the next few weeks here over at the Chargers on these podcasts?
I have no idea what Dan is doing. It's basically just kind of like, you know, running by the seat of his pants in terms of, you know, running into people and getting a chance to speak with them. Over the next few weeks, you know, I want to continue. It's been a while since we've done it, but we kind of do our positional breakdown and kind of just talk about the construction of that particular position. It was looking into the 2024 season. And then I was expecting it today, and I was expecting that you were going to be all over it as well when the news dropped. I was expecting the combine list to be released today, because I always get up for the combine. You know, you can call it the underwear Olympics all you want, but I love 350 pound dudes running 40 yard dashes and doing lateral moves out there. It's just fun to watch. So I was really stoked for that today. Maybe we'll get that tomorrow. But obviously, once we get past the Super Bowl, all eyes are on draft season. So I know we're both going to collectively have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, 100%. I love the draft. With Joe Ortiz at the helm, I'm even more excited for you than I am than usual. So should be a ton of fun. For those wondering, the Chargers, yes, obviously rehired Shane Day as their quarterbacks coach today. Tyler and I are going to cover the whole coaching staff when that comes out at a later time, as I'm sure Jake and Dan will do as well. But I do think that's a good move, solid move for sure. Jake, thanks so much for taking the time to join us, man. We really appreciate it. And let's talk soon, man.
Yeah, absolutely. This was fun. Thanks so much.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in. Make sure to like, subscribe, go do the same for Chargers Unleashed as well. And we'll see you next time. As always, bolt up.